Blog Talk Radio.
I will break your ass in half, you little shithead.
Yep.
The genesis of McGillicuddy.
I have to attack the bone computer.
Ultimate Warrior. Look at the adjective.
Play. He runs the Spanish. Finally, The Rock has come back home.
I'm back.
The boys are back in the saddle, so the Atomic Drop Show rides again on Blog Talk Radio.
Did you miss me? Oh, how I have missed you.
You can talk a little wrestling with us by calling 619-924-9761.
You're going to give me what I want. I've been asking for it for years.
And now, once again, here are your hosts, Justin Todd and Kyle Cruz.
Paul, speak up to me.
Every time I hear that intro, I get chills. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Atomic Drop Show. I'm your charming, colorful, and oh-so-handsome Justin Time. And alongside me, not out in sunny Orlando, not out in sunny Florida, nor is he even in sunny California. No. We have a special episode of the Atomic Drop Show. We have none other than Mr. Matt Johnson from the BICBP Radio Network filling in. Matt, how you doing?
I am great. How are you, man? Thanks for having me on the show tonight.
You know what? I feel honored and privileged to have you on one-on-one. I appreciate you filling in this week for Kyle, who's out on assignment.
Of course.
It's been a very interesting week. Before Mr. Cruz told me, he said he was going to be on, then he was going to be off, and he was going to be on, and then officially he was off, so... I feel a little let down. However, we're just going to pretty much pick up the ball and just kind of run with it. But other than that, how have you been since we last spoke? I haven't really technically spoke to you since the BICBP PodCon.
I've been well, man. I've just been just kind of taking it easy. Not overwhelming myself with podcasting, which is nice, but still staying busy at the same time. So I'm doing pretty good. Thank you for asking.
Not a problem. It's been a while, but it'll probably take a couple of minutes for us to try to get a rhythm right. But other than that, I think we're going to have ourselves a pretty good show. This week, we are going to be reviewing WWF In Your House 4, The Great White North, which was the main event of Big Daddy Cool Diesel versus the British Bulldog with James E. Cornette in his corner. Honestly, I will tell you the truth. I just watched that pay-per-view today, and I literally just finished up the main event maybe around, 2 hours ago. So it's still pretty fresh in my head. And you told me that you actually had the DVD of this. Is that true?
Yes, it's a burned copy. It's not an actual, professional one. But I had it made when I used to wrestle on Syracuse. A fan got me all the DVDs, made them for me, and I got them all on deck ready to go.
Hey, you know what? I greatly appreciate that you have well educated yourself for this particular show, and I salute you for that. But other than that, I know you got several other podcasts, so let's give a quick plug for all the podcasts that you're currently on.
All right, very good. Yes, first and foremost, the Two-Point Conversation football podcast. New episodes out every Wednesday and Thursday on pretty much any of your favorite podcasting apps, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, CastBox for Android users. But, yeah, that's my big one. Panel discussion out every Tuesday, Section 6 WrestleCast, which is focused on Western New York High School Wrestling. And then there's Hardly Kayfabe, the My Pro Wrestling podcast, Bill's Wire podcast for USA Today, and Retro Pop, which is a new bi-weekly podcast that I do.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Nice to see that you're keeping busy out there. I've actually been toying around with the idea of, believe it or not, starting up a secondary podcast. I've kind of been trying to throw around a couple ideas. Maybe, believe it or not, I was thinking about throwing out there a Garbage Plate Review podcast, believe it or not.
I like that idea a lot. I think that's a unique one. You know, that's a very Rochester-centric one, and, you know, the locals will love it. You might get some sponsorships, and people traveling, you know, through Rochester will definitely want to check it out. So I fully support that.
Hey, I greatly appreciate that very much. And since you did make mention of sponsors, we are, believe it or not, we have sponsors here on this fine program. The fine people over at ReloadRub.com sponsor this program, believe it or not. It's still kind of very mind-boggling. Yes, thank you. But if you go on to ReloadRub.com and use the promo code Atomic Drop Show, you will save yourself 10% at checkout. Now, if you've never heard of ReloadRub.com, Mr. Orndorff, when he was over at the BICDP Radio Network, he brought in several of their products, which are some very nice, flavorful seasonings. My personal favorite is the Pack and Heat. They also have a High Caliber, a sweet and smoky rub too as well. As well as several others that are escaping me right now, but I can honestly attest to the ones that I have just am and I am a firm believer in. So again, if you do go to ReloadRub.com and use the promo code Atomic Drop Show, and you will save yourself 10% at checkout. We are hoping to actually, we're not trying to get the Reload Rub guys on this show right now, or in the upcoming weeks, I should say, so we can definitely get them on there, show them a little love for our appreciation of being sponsors of their fine product. And if you haven't, just take a look at their website. They also have some amazing shirts. They also have some amazing koozies if you're a big prolific drinker and you just want to keep your hand a little bit warm while you're kicking back a cold one, or even a can of your favorite soda pop or Coke or whatever you want. They have some fine established garment there too. ReloadRub.com, save 10% at checkout. Other than that, believe it or not, right now too, I cannot believe it, but I keep getting massive alerts. The Thursday night football game is currently on, and the Packers are up 7-0. So what's your take on that Eagles-Packers game real quick before we dive on?
Oh, I'm actually watching it right now because my fantasy football defense is playing. I guess Eagles. Eagles not off to a good start, but it's a good Thursday night game, even though I'm not a big fan of Thursday night football. I think it's a bit of a wreck. Say it again?
I mean, is anybody really a fan of, like, Thursday night football? This might be the first time that there is an actual game that is worth our attention for this. And plus, if you're like an Amazon user, too, you get it for free, too. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. I just seen that, actually. Yeah, I mean, it's a good storyline for this game in pro wrestling terms. But other than that, I don't know. It's not good for the players health-wise. To have a quick turnaround like that, it's never a good thing. But maybe we'll see something good tonight. Maybe.
Hey, I'm hoping. I'm a huge cheesehead anytime that I can hopefully get the Sunday off and be able to watch other program and not worry about the Packers is also a very good week, in my opinion. It makes Sunday more enjoyable.
Yes, it does. I can't tell you how much I appreciate having those Sundays off to just celebrate and watch it with friends and family.
Absolutely. All right, so since we last spoke, you have been doing the radio network. You have been doing all the other podcasts. You've been branching out. You have been expanding the network, so to speak. And you said that we already have a new date set for next year's BICBP Radio Network. Is that correct, too?
Yep, the Western Europe PodCon. Yep, it's the date isn't like it's not cemented, but we are shooting for July 25th, and there's a lot of details that I can't really get into right now. But it's looking to be bigger and better than it was last year.
you know what? Anytime that I can get on news network radio and not having to be a felony or any other crime committing situation is always a bonus, especially when my ticket to fame was just chanting woo for the camera.
It was. So, that's right. You did get to do that.
I can honestly say I've been on tons of Rochester radio networks. Buffalo was the first, so thank you for that one. I greatly appreciate that.
Oh, dude, thanks for being a part of it, man. I was glad everybody got their time to shine.
Not a problem. All right. Let's dive right into a little bit of this. We're going to change up format a little bit here, so I hope some people don't mind. But this is a little bit of a condensed version of the Atomic Drop Show this week. So this week, we have been reviewing a whole bunch of the In Your Houses. And this week, we are on In Your House 4, The Great White North, which was held out in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, with the attendance record of 10,339. So pretty much what the end result was that it was just a glorified Canadian pay-per-view if you were a fan of the British Bulldog, who was actually British. However, he was cheered like a Canadian hero. So I don't know how that worked. And it was also one
of
those rare...
Yeah, it's a Hart family connection.
Huge Hart family connection, which I found very shocking that did not show any Owen Hart on the card at all, which was a little bit shocking for me. However, Owen Hart... Oh, go ahead.
No, he was... Wasn't he the main... Oh, he was an extra... Oh,
he was in
a dark
match.
He was a dark match, that's correct, yeah.
Yes.
It is weird that they want to put that on the actual main card. That is, you are 100% correct on that.
The main card matches were as follows. Hunter Hearst Helmsley, not to be confused with Triple H, defeated Fatu. Smoking Guns defeated 1-2-3 Kid and Razor. The debut of Goldust defeating Marty Jannetty. King Mabel with Sir Mo versus Yokozuna. Razor Ramon defeated Dean Douglas. British Bulldog defeats Diesel. And in the dark matches were Henry O. Godwin defeats Psycho Sid. Bret Hart defeats Dr. Isaac Yankum's DDS. And believe it or not, dark match number 10 was Owen Hart and Yokozuna versus, defeated Bam Bam Bigelow and Savio Vega, which for 90s Saturns or 90s pay-per-views and whatnot, that's a pretty solid card.
It is. I mean, 95 was a weird time period, too, where, I don't know, you're just in this transition from the golden era to almost at the Attitude Era, but not quite yet. And this is actually pretty good. I mean, these are the top stars. Like I said, the only weird thing was that, you know, a lot of these big name guys weren't featured on the main show. I mean, that's more important to the live crowd, but for people watching at home, it's a little strange. But other than that, yeah, I think it's a pretty good solid card overall.
Last week, poor Kyle, I completely whiffed out on watching In Your House 3, which he dubbed the worst In Your House ever. However, that was only up to number 3, so I still have my doubts on how bad it can honestly get. But this one, I want to say, like I said, it was a pretty solid card. Like I said, first matchup on the card was Bob Holly, who defeated Rad Redford. Believe it or not, I have never heard of this individual before. He performed in Mexico under the ring name Madonna's Boyfriend.
Yeah, he was, what's his name? Louis Spicoli.
Oh, that was Louis Spicoli.
Yeah.
But
he had quite a few names. Body Snatcher, Cutie Pie, Killer Blonde. He went by his regular name, Madonna's Boyfriend, Mercenario 3. Redford and the Zodiac. But he was pretty much a dark match guy. His big break was in ECW. I wouldn't even call it a big break because it didn't last long. But yeah, he had an interesting little underrated career.
He did. He made out pretty well for himself once he got into ECW,
yeah.
That is for sure.
As long as you're getting on TV, though, I think that's the biggest deal. That's the biggest deal.
Without question. But
yeah.
The first matchup on the card that was advertised, excuse me, I'm kind of fighting off a little bit of a cold, too, so if I sound a little bit hoarse, that's pretty much the reason why. The first matchup was Hunter Hearst Helmsley defeated Fatu in 8 minutes and 6 seconds. This was the first pay-per-view debut of Hunter Hearst Helmsley, and I believe this was the second time that Fatu, now known as Rikishi, was on the house as well. It was a fun introductory match for Triple H onto this match. The big thing that I currently enjoyed about this match was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, which was I thought was phenomenal. I also believe that Fatu was also a very good showing, a very good first choice for this match for a Triple H. And the only question that I have to ask is, besides this whole Henry Godwin, was what was going on with Lawler's mullet like hair?
Oh, man, that was something.
That thing was huge.
That is a beautiful, large mane of hair. That's what I got to say to that.
I honestly did not
something.
Know it grew down that low.
Yeah, man.
I just sat there and I remember him just always kind of being somewhat clean cut, maybe a little bit shaggy even in his Memphis days, and kind of clean cut with a beard, but man, God, that was a true 90s mullet.
Yeah, it doesn't get much more 90s than that. He made it look pretty royal, too. But yeah, this was a good introductory match, you know, for, I mean, the main show. I mean, you get to see Fatu, who was not like he wasn't a big deal by any means, and it was actually kind of crazy seeing how in shape Rikishi was at one point. Like, I think that might be the first time I've watched him as just Fatu. And he had a good show, and he bumped out of the pedigree and this and that. But yeah,
he's like the first person with no solid pedigree.
Essentially. Yeah, technically he is. Yeah, he started. He got DDT and started dancing and stuff. Like, he's just, yeah. He's.
Now you got to ask for permission to kick out of that bad boy.
That's right. That's right. A lot of permission.
But the match was good, and it definitely did set up a tease for what Hunter Hearst Helmsley will end up be doing when Henry O. Godwin, also known as Hog, came out with the slot bucket too as well. A little bit of foreshadowing that we all know. This is around the time where we all know that the curtain call was going to be happening in Madison Square Garden. So it's right around that time.
Yes.
So it's a little bit of foreshadowing of where Hunter Hearst Helmsley or Triple H's career will be heading down to, which is pretty much the bottom of the card. You can't get any lower than being the curtain jerker for a pre-show.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
All right. Second match up on the card was the Smoking Guns, Billy and Bart, who defeated the 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon for the Tag Team Championships with a match time of 12 minutes and 46 seconds. This was, I believe, the second debut of Billy and Bart on In Your House. I believe they debuted last month at In Your House 3. I'm still waiting, believe it or not, for the debut of Sonny. But the match, how the storyline went, was that the 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon finally came together, set aside their differences, and decided to team up to try to capture the Tag Team Championships. And sadly, it came a little bit short when 1-2-3 Kid wanted real bad to take that pin from Razor, so he opted to tag in and then got schoolboyed for the 1-2-3, shockingly. And then after immediately right after the match, Kid ran in there and started to pretty much own all the guns right there, with a high with a bunch of high kicks and roundhouse kicks going on, and and then had Wraith come out for the save and try to calm down the kid and tell him to calm down and pretty much escort him to the back for the most part. Match quality, the one takeaway I enjoy out of this match was the fact that there is only one other person who can take a flying headbutt into the turnbuckle is Ric Flair, then Billy Gunn. I think those two, whenever they get a flying headbutt into the turnbuckle, is always phenomenal and then turns into like a forward face bump. It's just a personal favorite of mine watching whenever Billy Gunn gets into the ring.
Yeah, you aren't kidding, man. This was a good tag team match. I like the storyline. The Smoking Guns were, I mean, they were pretty hot at this time, right? And Billy Gunn was just starting to find himself. Bart Gunn wouldn't last too much longer. This was kind of at the height of his popularity. And, you know, 1-2-3 Kid Razor Ramon, they had that famous match on the Monday Night Raw coming together. And I think not too long after this, 1-2-3 Kid ended up being a heel before he phased out, got released, and went to WCW. But yeah, I mean, I like rivals coming together for tag team title matches, tag team runs. I think it works sometimes if you do it effectively. And, you know, if they would have dragged out 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon even longer than they did, I think it would have been something really special headed into the Attitude Era.
Without question on that. the Smoking Guns were pretty much, they just technically kind of hit their second matchup on there. They were a little bit lost with the Canadian crowd, obviously being from Texas and being all the way up in Canada. It just kind of seemed it was a little ass backward for me. But other than that, the crowd loves Razor. Razor completely over with the crowd. And then having Razor come out again later for the Intercontinental Championship, it kind of made me think that there wasn't enough star power on the show where you would need Razor to wrestle twice, and then looking at the dark match, having Yoko and then wrestle with Mabel and then with Owen Hart again, it just made me wonder that they're really pushing hard for superstars and trying to fill in this roster. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the IC title was, yeah, it was a weird spot, right, you know, at this point, and yeah, I don't know, because I think that this would have been an excellent opportunity to put the belt on somebody like Owen, or maybe not, definitely not Brett at this point, but Owen, you know what I mean? Give him that, put make it a main event, make it interesting, more, a little bit more interesting than a Dean Douglas short run, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
the main event, the dark match, you know, not to get too ahead, but I mean, that's a fun matchup on its own, and definitely cater to Canada, but yeah, it's kind of a shame. Like, that's like Dean Douglas's only like claim to fame is that very short title run, and it's, yeah, because Sean had to forfeit it because he got beat up, and then
he got his ass whooped.
It was in Rochester or Syracuse, I think.
Syracuse.
I think it was Syracuse. That's what it was. Yep, and a couple of Marines forgot about that.
Allegedly,
a couple days. Allegedly. Oh, yeah. That was a couple days before, but that was the obvious choice. But that was the obvious choice. To have Razor Ramon walk away with it. You can't have Dean Douglas was an incredible champion, especially the way he won it. And, I mean, they actually went for a good time.
It did, 12 minutes and 46 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing that makes me question is that the very first paper or In Your House had Savio Vega coming to the aid of Razor Ramon, and then the second one was Savio Vega was also teaming up with Razor Ramon. And now Savio Vega is in the dark match with Bam Bam Bigelow and Razor's with 1-2-3 Kid. That part just absolutely made like no sense. It's like, how far off the roster did you fall to get onto a dark match when your debut's with Razor, who is probably one of the most over guys at that point in time?
Yeah, that's a bit of a fall from grace. And we all know that, you know, Savio is, he's not one of, like, you know his name, but he's not one of those guys who are going to be remembered forever, which I find kind of funny in hindsight. But, yeah, that's a bit of a fall from grace. I mean, of course, you get to team with Bam Bam Bigelow later on, but yeah, that's a bit of a fall. The Razor Ramon Savio Vega team, it works, it makes sense. But, yeah, just a bit of a fall from grace.
It was just a little bit mind-boggling. That's all I could say. Action, like we said, was sound. It was a good back-and-forth match. It was a decently good match. But to follow that up was, believe it or not, the debut of Goldust, who defeated Marty Jannetty in 11 minutes and 15 seconds. Always whatever else you want to do. But we now know of the character. He seemed a little bit different, but as we know, we go this. Then just some of the thing that back Marty just to certain of the capacity of Marty G was nothing needed for at this point. I do not know that on 1995 altitude area and beyond. Having the glitter fall from the ceiling, just very reminiscent. Just felt good. Just a close match.
Yeah, I've always been like this fascination with the Goldust character. I really, truly have. I think he was so ahead of his time. And this is, again, this
in
is like
way?
The Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Fatu match. Goldust,
yeah,
because he was a gimmick character in a very heavy gimmick era, but he made it work in the same, now I'm not going to say in the same way, but he almost immortalized it like The Undertaker and Kane did. Which made a big deal. Yes, he pushed the weird sexual theme. Like, it was really awkward, really weird, and you've never seen that before that, and you probably haven't seen anything really to that point after that either. But yeah, Goldust was very, very ahead of his time, and of course, you know, a great worker in his own right. But yeah, just everything about Goldust worked, and he evolved. You know, it's the character evolved over time. I really enjoyed Goldust, and I'm a little upset that I'll never see it again. But yeah, I think Goldust was very ahead of his time.
Goldust was very ahead of his time. The live crowd, however, very unsure of Goldust during his debut match.
That's
pretty
the best
quiet,
part, though, right?
I
That's
know.
That's the best part. He makes people uncomfortable, and they didn't know what to think of him. You know, like I said, this is the time of Isaac Yankum, which you're going to get to. You know, the Goon and all these weird gimmicky characters. And then Goldust comes out. This guy painted all in gold and doing this weird stuff. You don't think he's going to last. You don't get behind him. And then, you know, after this, you start to see who he is as a character and a person. And oh, it's just amazing. It's amazing to watch. It was so masterfully done.
And we do know that later on, Goldust will be feuding with Hunter Hearst Helmsley, which I think is one of my favorite Goldust feuds out there, when
yes.
Marlena and Chyna slowly get involved into that equation, too. I think those two just worked so perfectly well together. And then also don't forget that Goldust, Mankind, and Paul Bearer were a thing, too, which was even more bizarre and weird. But then again, it suits all of three of those characters.
Yeah. It fit in, man. It just made sense. Just made sense.
Next matchup was King Mabel with Sir Mo versus Yokozuna with James E. Cornette, and Mr. Fuji ended in a double count out in a 5-minute, 12-second match. The moment I heard this match, I immediately thought of WWE ECW when they had their Monsters Ball match, when it was Big Daddy V versus Kane, and it was just reminiscent of that match. I'm thinking, this is insane. The purpose for this match was that King Mabel and Yokozuna, interim president Gorilla Monsoon made this match because both men broke the quote face of the Undertaker, and I believe it was like an orbital socket on the Undertaker, and to satisfy the crowd, Gorilla decided to make Mabel versus Yokozuna. It was a very, I don't want to use the corny analogies, but it was just like two bulls in a china shop just sitting there just trying to get something going. But, of course, it ended in a double countout with both Mabel and Yoko just hugging each other.
Yeah, you got it. Kind of figured that. That's sloppy booking, which kind of, it's unfortunate. You hate to see it because that's actually like a really, really good match on paper. You hear that? You're like, holy crap, these guys are going to tear into each other. Yoko and Mabel were some of the best big man wrestlers of all time.
Throw Bob Bam Bam in there.
Yeah, Bam Bam too. Because those guys can move. Those guys could go, that was the thing. Those guys can really move quick in the ring. And it's still weird thinking about King Mabel. Here we are 25 years later, 24 years later, Mabel getting this big push and, especially what he was to become in a couple of years. But it was just a weird matchup. It seems to be a trend on a lot of WWE pay-per-views, even to this day. It's an unfortunate ending to a potential great match.
It was. And going back to the big men, like you said, they were some of the greatest big men out there. I know that Bam Bam came from the Monster Factory out in Jersey. However, I don't know if Mabel came from the Monster Factory too or not.
I'm not 100% certain on that.
But if they did, it would be phenomenal. It's just something that I think that he would have been a phenomenal individual if he did enter the Monster Factory. I'm trying to read it up right now on the ever-famous Wikipedia page, because that's pretty much how we go about this whole entire show. Doesn't really say who he was trained by, which is kind of disappointing
for a big man.
No, sir.
He said he debuted
really
for USWA. Yeah, that's about it.
But other than that, I every time I see like some of these big men, I always think about if they were part of the Monster Factory or not, because that organization that produced Bam Bam was just a phenomenal training facility, and I don't even know if it's still open or not. But if it is, all power to them. I just appreciate just seeing big men just doing big things.
Yeah, it's,
it's a lost art.
We're in this day and age. It is. We're in this day and age to see the little guys do high flying stuff. And big men can go, man. I've seen some great big men matches. And you're 100% right. It's a lost art. Absolutely lost art.
All right. Next Oh, believe it or not, we actually go to a interview with Doc Hendricks real quick. As he is sitting there shilling for the cardboard cutouts of Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart over at the Superstar line. And if you pay about $20 with $3 shipping and handling, you can get yourself your own personal cutout of Shawn Michaels or Bret Hart. And I will tell you personally, I own the Bret Hart stand-up cutout.
Do you?
I believe it or not,
cool.
I do. It it was during It was during April 1997, and it was the match after WrestleMania 13. It was Revenge of the Taker. It was here in Rochester, which we will be reviewing. Wegmans was going to promote WWE coming to town when Wegmans, believe it or not, once used to have a video department inside of their store. And my mother was working at Wegmans at that point in time. And she was able to obtain the cardboard cutout for me of Bret Hart, who still sits in my parents' basements.
That is awesome. Your mom
now,
is awesome.
Oh, you have no idea. I'm going to tell you a fun fact about this Bret Hart cutout now. The very first night that he was in my room, I couldn't sleep because he just sat there and kept staring at me. And it was kind of like creeping me out like around 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning. So what I ended up doing was I took Bret Hart out and I put him in the living room and I put him face down. Now, my father gets up a little bit later in the morning to try to let the dog out. And as the moonlight is hitting the reflection of Bret Hart, my father proceeds to jump out of his skin and wonder who the hell passed out in the middle of our living room. Needless to say, he told me to just put like Bret Hart in the bathroom next time if I can't sleep next to him, or just put him somewhere where he will not get the shit scared out of him. For the most part, just one of my favorite memories of that stupid cardboard cutout.
That's a fair. I mean, that's a fair request. Cardboard cutouts are cool, but I can see, you know, how creepy that would be to wake up in the middle of the night to see that. Absolutely.
Especially with the moonlight just reflecting on him, too. Just kind of face down.
Yeah.
I put him face down thinking, well, if someone's going to see him, they're going to know that. They're going to see, like, the little cardboard stand in the back. But nope, not my father. Not Father Time. Now, mind you, too, he was a dairy farmer, so he woke up rather early, around 3:45 every morning. So this was pretty much a heart-pounding moment for him to get his adrenaline going at such an odd hour of the morning. But just a fun little memory right there of that cardboard cutout. All right. Next matchup was Razor Ramon, again, who defeated Dean Douglas, interim Intercontinental Champion, for 11 minutes and 7 seconds. As we do know, Dean Douglas was better known as Shane Douglas in ECW, the franchise, who I actually did meet out in Buffalo, several years ago, like Easter Saturday, which was a very phenomenal meeting between the two people, between myself and him. But Razor comes back out. He's pretty much foreshadowing, like, do I want to become a 4-time champion, throw up the fours? It's kind of like a little prelude to his four life from the NWO, I thought. I believe that this match right here was probably the match of the night. But not to be outdone, beforehand we did have Shawn Michaels, who did walk out very somberly, as history has dictated. It was the four Marines that came out and pretty much whooped his ass out in a bar. It's been documented throughout wrestling. However, Shawn's looking pretty worse for wear right there. He's got himself a couple nice shiners. Moving a little bit gingerly, face still pretty swollen. It was a very sad moment as the crowds were chanting for Shawn. It's I believe it's kind of reminiscent of the Lost by Smile gimmick that happened maybe the year or 2 years following, too. It had that same entire vibe all over again.
Which is weird, though, too, because you think about Shawn Michaels getting cheered in Canada, sympathy in Canada, and you know how that would all change in the coming years, too.
It comes full circle. It leaves, I think, after the screw job, Shawn was obviously public enemy number one, and nobody can get more heat in Canada than Shawn Michaels. Especially when that one Raw, when he trolled everybody by playing the Hitman's music, and Hitman was nowhere to ever be found again.
Yes, that was a good one.
Midget Bret Hart the following night on Raw, that was also a good one too. Any mention of Bret Hart by Shawn Michaels would always draw a, or a, ooh. There they are. But match of the night, Dean Douglas, Razor Ramon. This match had a little bit of everything in it. It was, it's kind of sad that this was the match of the night for a two-hour pay-per-view. And it does show that the Intercontinental Championship is, and forever will be the workhorse championship for the WWF and E.
Yeah, that's it. It really is, and I'm okay with that. I mean, to the WWE, you know, the main titles are big, flashy, this and that. I like the idea of having a workhorse championship. It's something to really pride yourself on as a wrestler, and you know, even looking to them as a fan. It's pretty sweet too, but I mean, it was a great showing. Dean Douglas didn't really do a whole lot in the WWF at the time. And yeah, for him and Razor to go the way that they did, the duration that they did it was just excellent. It gave character, I think, to the Intercontinental title, which was, you know, which is always great too, considering how much it's fallen off in some instances, depending on, you know, what era you're watching.
This is very true too. I have a replica championship, Intercontinental Championship belt that my main goal is to try to get all the surviving Intercontinental Champions to sign. At this current moment, I have Bret Hart. I have Jim the Anvil, Craig the Hammer. Who else do I have on that thing? Oh, gosh. Could not get Foley because Foley never was one. Oh, there's at least two more other autographs I have on the belt. But I'm a big fan of the white Intercontinental Championship belt. I don't know
That's
what your thoughts
design.
Are.
Yeah.
It is the best design. I am so glad that Cody, before he left, brought back the white one, because it is the most prestigious one, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do like the 2003 one, too. That's probably my second favorite, but the white Intercontinental, the white strap, that's the best one. It doesn't get much more throwback than that. It's just, yeah, it's a cool look. They used to have, like, a yellow strap one, I think.
Yep.
And it was a little weird. Yeah. It was a little strange, but the white strap is just a good touch.
It just shows that it's just clean. I don't know why. The very first time I've ever saw the Intercontinental Championship back when Hunter Hearst Helmsley had it, and he came out in the robe, and it was just white. And I would just remember my eye being drawn to that. And not to carbon date myself, but I have been watching wrestling since 1996, I want to say. At least 1996, because my very first pay-per-view was Buried Alive.
Okay.
And I just remember sitting there and just thinking, this is just the coolest championship, and I still stand by that statement, too. Like I said, my goal is to try to get all of the Intercontinental Champions to sign it. The big one that I always want to try to get, now I know I can never get signed, is Piper. I was hoping at least for him to just show up, because every year at Frontier, we have a salute to Pro Wrestling Night here. And we always try to get out a big-name wrestler. Last year it was Foley. This year it was Lawler, believe it or not.
Oh. That's a cool one. Yeah, it's just thinking about Piper that you never got to meet him. I met him one time at our show in Syracuse that I was wrestling on. He was a wonderful human being. And I feel, you know, any fan who wanted to meet him and didn't get to, I truly feel sorry that they didn't get that experience.
It's heartbreaking. He was the one that I wanted to get signed more than anybody. I just was always a fan of Piper. But that's just me kind of going off and wishing that I could. So I guess I'm just going to have to surf around eBay for a autograph of authenticity to fill that void in my heart. At least, or up on my wall, whichever comes first. Now, before I trail off a little bit more, who was probably your favorite Intercontinental champion?
Oh, man, that's a good one.
I'll give you at least a top three. How about that?
Okay, that's fair. I really liked Randy Orton's reign when he had it. That was a fun time, and he
Legend
had some great matches. He had some great matches with some great people. Two would have to be Christian. Christian was one of my favorite wrestlers.
Really?
And this is actually no. Yeah, this is actually in no specific order, to be honest with you. Christian was probably one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Top five, easily. And then my last one would have to be, gotta go Chris Jericho, right? The multi-time guy. He just, I feel like every gimmick he had in the WWE, he experienced the IC title at least once. And, you know, I think Ken Shamrock had a little bit of a reign with it, too. And I really, really, really enjoyed, you know, I really loved watching Ken Shamrock wrestle. Another favorite of mine, too. Those would probably be my top ones.
Gosh, for myself, in no particular order, the first one that always comes up is I love the Honky Tonk Man. It throws a lot of people for
a
loop. Oh, my God. I believe it or not, I have an autograph from the Honky Tonk Man.
Do you?
I swear to God, I do. I showed it to Kyle and Todd when they were here because they did not believe me in any way, shape, or form. I pulled that out, and I silenced all my critics.
He's a sweet guy. He's a cool guy, too. He was at an ESW show a couple years ago. He was great.
I need to get his autograph in the worst humanly way. He is, since Piper is no longer with us, he shot up to my number one to get signed on this belt before, God forbid, something happens now to him.
Yeah, Honky Tonk Man's great. I love watching his interviews. And yeah, he was really cool in person.
Oh, the gimmick was phenomenal. I could sit there and spend a whole show on his gimmick. But another Intercontinental I enjoyed Mr. Perfect.
That was a good one. Yeah.
Everybody wanted to be Mr. Perfect, and everybody knows that one person who could do no wrong, who just could put his hand in a pile of shit and pull out a ham sandwich, it'd be perfectly clean. Everybody knows that one guy. I worked with somebody like Mr. Perfect, and I just stared at him, and I went, how the hell can you just be so honest to God perfect?
Yeah, right? It's just, everybody knows one. I think that's the best way to put it.
And probably, I'm going to say The Miz. The Miz has been a multiple-time champion, and his reign with that stupid over and over again has been my opinion.
Yeah, he's been the best modern champion. without a doubt. Like, he's had really good bouts, really underappreciated bouts as the Intercontinental Champion. So, yeah, that's a great, that's a great choice.
I mean, I love his gimmick. I loved him before he was getting – or when he was getting booed. I stood behind him the whole entire time. He was entertaining to me. The only time I was never big into The Miz was when he first debuted back on ECW. And it was just crap. And it wasn't any fault to him, but it was – he needed to evolve his character, in which he did.
Yeah, the Punk thing was – it was strange. It was kind of just based off his, you know, real TV or whatever shtick he had. But, but yeah, the evolution of Miz has been really fun, just watching him go from an entertainer to – or, you know, to that, to what he is now. And he's grown so much, man. It's been fun. It's cool when you can watch a guy grow like that. Really fun.
It is. I get – the only other person I have seen that I got the enjoyment of watching grow was Edge. When I first watched his first Shotgun Saturday Night match against one of the Los Bruiquas, and I remember watching this one match, and I said, this guy is going to be huge. I looked over at my uncle and said, how do you even know that? I said, I just have this feeling. And then Edge jumped over the top rope and snapped a Los Bruiquas next, and he got carded out. That is all I remember of Edge's first match in WWE. That, and I just said, this guy has it. I don't know what it is, but Edge, from that one match, grow to what he became, is a fun transition. Like you said, it's fun to watch characters grow. Same with Randy Orton, too, when he first came out. It was fun to watch Orton as the third generation and then just nowhere and just skyrocket.
Yeah, I mean, look where he's at now. He doesn't even really have a gimmick anymore. He's just kind of, he gets over it. He just,
Orton.
I don't know how to quite
Orton,
put it into
Orton.
Words. He's Orton, but yeah, he doesn't have a shtick, like a gimmick anymore. He's just him. Everybody kind of knows who he is and what he's about at this point. So yeah.
And if you piss him off, he's just going to sit there and shit in your luggage bag. But again, that's just a legend. And probably the only other superstar that I kind of enjoyed watching grow was Cody. When he debuted on Raw with I was going to call him Sparkplug, Bob Holly.
Yeah,
and just seeing what he's grown to now.
He had that super generic, like, rock, like, country. I'm not even going to say it's country, but that super generic theme song. And, yeah, he went to, it was priceless. And then now he's, like, the best wrestler on the planet. Yeah. He's evolved so much.
I love the wrestling business for evolution. I mean, nobody better than Jericho who can sit there and reinvent themselves than Jericho. He is the master. He needs, if anything, he needs to go down, if bridges can be met, down to the Performance Center to train and teach younger kids on how to reinvent themselves. He is, again, I will say this till the day I die, he is the best person to reinvent somebody, and that's him.
Yes. No, I won't disagree with you at all.
But we're trailing off of here. So, main event time now. Main event was the British Bulldog who defeated Diesel by disqualification, 18 minutes and 14 seconds, according to the ever-famous Wikipedia page. This match was a very slow-paced kind of match, which was kind of to be expected when you got gets like Diesel and Bulldog in there. Jimmy Cornette was managing Bulldog once more. And believe it or not, Corny had a triple P here. Owen and Yoko. Corny was just all over the place, and I'm sure the Canadians were just getting really tired of him.
Yeah, he had quite the stable back in the day. It was an interesting group of guys that were all very talented. But yeah, multiple, big duty, so to speak, in his regard. But yeah, had a great stable in there. And you know, it sucks because I really liked British Bulldog. I thought he was a great wrestler, very underappreciated, very kind of underrated. And he was more technical. And then you have a guy like Diesel in this main event who's not really any of those things. He's just a big, tall, powerhouse goon, essentially. So this, you know, we've seen what Bulldog could do with the likes of Bret Hart and Owen and so many others. Some of the matches that he's put on, and then you get this one, and you just take Bulldog completely out of his own style.
It did. Watching this match, Bulldog was going for a very technical style of match. He wasn't really matching power up against Nash or Diesel or whoever you want to call him as. He was getting more ground base, which I thought was very interesting. One of the key takeaways from watching this match was he would Nash's leg up on the bottom rope and then kind of jump on it and slam his ass down on his leg, kind of like what Hart used to do too back in the day. And I don't know what the purpose of, but that just right there showed me how technical of a match that this is going to be just out of that one move, especially when he sat there and tried to slap the sharpshooter on as Brett was on commentary saying it just didn't look pretty at all. As Vince was also trying to sit there and save it by saying, but do you feel like it was more powerful because it came from the Bulldog and his massive strength? Which was a very good question to even ask on commentary, which I never would have much thought of.
Yeah, that's a deep question.
Vince was the king of the deep questions. That is the one thing.
He was.
I mean, just having him and King on commentary, I thoroughly enjoyed him. Between those two, everybody loves Bobby and Gorilla too. Those two together were probably the best 1-2 combination of commentary teams out there.
I completely agree. They just had this classic, organic way of talking on commentary that people don't, or well, they're not allowed to have anymore. So I love those older groups you mentioned.
And it's something more when I'm going back there and I'm actually laughing with Lawler, because obviously back in 95 and 96, off the chain, and Preach didn't really care what he said, or Vince didn't care what he said. It was just Lawler being Lawler, and I miss that so much. I miss a little bit of comedy in my wrestling.
I agree. I mean, and Lawler's coming back to commentary too.
He is.
You know, he's not going to be the same person that he was 20 years ago, and that was the best kind.
I'm just enjoying it, especially. You know Lawler's on fire any time when Helen was out there, Helen Hart and Stu Hart were sitting out there, any match, and he all night long he would just sit there and rip them over and over and over again. It just made for an awesome night whenever I saw Helen and Stu sitting there with the King on commentary.
Yeah, he always had a shot to take, that's for sure.
Oh. God, at least 5, 6, 7 of them. Whatever it is, something about Lawler and the Hart family just always makes me happy. I don't know why.
I wonder if there's a real background to it. I never actually looked into it. If there was real, is it a real thing or what? I'm curious now.
I think it's just I don't know. I just think it was just. Maybe it was territorial, I don't know, with Stu owning Stampede up there and Lawler owning, I don't know.
Could be.
But other than that, gosh, sorry, I'm trying to go back here. Bulldog defeated Diesel when Bulldog pretty much smacked the headset off of Bret Hart at commentary, and just Bret ran in and started beating the crap out of his brother-in-law, which I have a brother-in-law, and I would not mind sitting there beating the crap out of my own brother-in-law once or twice a day. But that's just petty business. But it was a fun, interesting style of ground and pound for the Bulldog. That's all I got to say. I really don't have much else to say about this match. It was just a little bit of a snooze fest for me. I had a little bit more higher intentions. And then the big takeaway was having the roster come out and pull everyone away.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of play. It's a crap way to end an actual pay-per-view, but obviously the live show got better, you know, of course. But yeah, that's mid-90s booking. That's why wrestling was kind of failing at that point, because of, you know, shows ending like that, or, you know.
It just wasn't satisfying, and like you said, this is that. I like to refer to it as the awkward teenager stage, where we're kind of trying to transition into something, but we just don't know yet. But when it transitioned, it's going to be huge. It's just bad, and I think I want to say that I hope that Vince knew that going into this, and just knowing how bad he was getting his ass beat, because this. We're up to pay-per-view 4, and there has only been one Lex Luger match on guard when he was with the Bulldog as part of the Allied Powers, and then Luger jumped ship over to WCW, and that was it. And then you just sit there and start seeing these guys who are on maybe once, and then just dip over to WCW the next month. It's just a horrible, horrible time for WWF.
Yeah, you couldn't have any consistency, and I just think that some of their ideas were too wild, you know, and all that. Some of their booking ideas were wild. Their characters were wild. They just got too cartoonish. They really did. I mean, which I think, you know, I keep alluding to it, but yeah, that's why WWE wasn't doing all that great. That's just 100% why. You know, your undercard, the mid card and lower card is just as important as your main event. It is. You have a whole show to book, and I mean, you're doing with these guys who just have stupid gimmicks, stupid characters, and, you know, people change the channel before they get to your main event. That's kind of what happens. That's exactly what happens. And it seems to cycle through, because within the last 10 years, it's happened multiple times where, you know, characters with bad gimmicks has made people want to turn off their TVs and not come back to it. That's just the way wrestling is. But yeah, mid-90s was really bad for the WWF. Really bad.
Okay, let's do this. So, you have lived the business and been part of the business for many years. And NFL. What was the one thing, the one segment, match, whatever, that made you actually feel embarrassed to be a wrestling fan?
That I watched on TV?
You can watch on TV, yes.
Oh, boy. Where do I start?
Wasn't going to be easy tonight, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I like being challenged. I think one I can allude to is the Vince McMahon limo storyline. That was one. I'm not going to say it's my first, but that was a big one for me. And there was just some other years where it's like I don't like any like WWE product from like 2000. Like late 2005 to 2009, I just can't watch. I thought the booking was bad, the characters were bad. It's just like no good memories from that time period at all.
Okay. I'm just kind of taken away by the limo, though. That one, I was drawn in, hook, line, and sinker on that whole storyline until the Benoit tragedy. I mean, that one right there just captivated me and just drew me in.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's different. You know, I just like a little bit more realism. You knew for a fact that Vince McMahon wasn't actually, well, you know.
Oh, of
at
course.
Least I knew.
Everybody knew that. It was just something that was never done before. It was just like culture shock.
Yeah. Oh, I can agree with that.
I feel that since you made mention, there's probably two times. One of them was when after the limo, they're going to find out Vince's illegitimate child.
That's a good one to reference.
That I was all for it until it was Hornswoggle. Then I just sat there and I just was just like, whatever. I just turned off immediately. I mean, everybody was hoping that it was going to be Kennedy or Sandman or even Austin. I mean, all that stuff right there was, I thought, would have been made for an amazing line, and they just literally took it and threw it out. That it irks me still to this day. And the second one that comes on is Katie Vick, whole storyline was just really, really awful. That was the other time that made me feel like, God, why am I even putting in the effort to watch wrestling anymore? I joke and say I've been in since 96. That's my joke. And I said, I'm in too deep to stop now. And I seriously thought long and hard that I'm going to need to take a break from watching wrestling from that point in time. It just was really bad.
Yeah, I it's there's been just time, like, even for me now, still it's hard for me to watch wrestling. I don't know, you know, I can't completely get away from it, but at the same time, it's just like I'm not creatively invested anymore, and you know, there's
right. You lived it.
It's been a long time since I lived it. There's been a lot, you know, it's been a long time since there's been an incident per se, but. You know, it's just, it's kind of the way that it goes.
It like I said, wrestling comes in waves. I mean, you talk to any wrestling analysis, and even you and I both know that wrestling, like every 10 years, it picks up and then it dies down and then picks up again and dies down. I feel like we are building up to a new high with AEW coming up. I feel like they're going to be a nice shot of adrenaline to the wrestling promotion. I just hope that they don't feel like they're getting too big on themselves, because when Impact debuted, I wasn't really too keen on Impact, but I have higher hopes for AEW than I do on Impact, which I'm still kind of just baffled how Impact is still up and going at this point in time, as much like as anybody else on Green Earth.
They shrunk themselves down. They actually did pretty smart. They didn't try to be this big company anymore. They're like super indie status at this point.
Which is kind of right where they need to be, but AEW is, I don't know if they're going to take on the machine or not, or at least if they are, they're going to have to start with NXT and build their way up, because I know they have the backing and they have the money. That is for sure with Tony Khan at the helm right there. And with Shahid Khan over in the Jag Sue, there is a very big amount of money that they can sit there and spend to make this a big deal.
Yeah. They can compete. It's just, like I said, the last time I was on, we talked about it too. It's if they can present compelling weekly television they can possibly compete with the big dogs. That's really what it's going to come down to.
Kyle kind of referred to them when me and Kyle speak quite frequently on the phone. He referred to them as a poor man's Raw, and that is exactly what AEW is. It's just a poor man's Raw. They got the camera shots, they got the pyro, but he just doesn't believe that they can sit there and get the exposure that WWE can deliver. And after he said that and it kind of sunk in a little bit, I'm going to have to agree, but there's going to be people that obviously are going to sit there and just dive head into the Kool-Aid man and just put it all in.
Yeah, you know, I'm waiting because I haven't seen their weekly stuff yet. You know, I don't want to judge them too early about what the kinks that they've been working out all summer long, you know, since they made the announcement that AEW is coming. You know, once the weekly television, you know, goes, then I think we can really start making judgments and, you know, as well. WWE fans drink their own Kool-Aid, essentially. You know, they buy into the hype and don't question things, and it works both ways in that regard. But I'm going to wait and see what AEW has to offer. Like I said, I don't get really excited for a lot with pro wrestling anymore. This news has made me excited, but I don't know if, you know, I'm going to have to see if it's something worth watching, then I will invest my time in it.
Absolutely. The big thing is, like, if you want to invest your time, you also have to think about investing your money in, too. I'm trying to slap down that money for the Fight app and to purchase the pay-per-views, too. Right there, WWE obviously got them beat with the app where you can pay $9.99 for your pay-per-views versus what AEW is charging, which is, what, $50 still? It's pretty much like an apples and oranges game if you want to keep up with the content.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, and that does go a long way, because WWE does have a lot of content. It's more like a convenience thing. It's like going to a Tim Hortons versus helping your local upstart business, you know, your small business. That's the kind of way I look at it. And I'd rather help out the little guy and see what it can become and invest in it than continue to feed into the big major, you know, company. Oh, just undoubtedly do that. That's just me, though. That's my philosophy.
I agree. You always want to support indie wrestling or any independent individual, be it a small business. That's why we do have small business Saturdays and try to keep up and try to help spread the wealth everywhere. Don't always spend it off on like big box stores.
Exactly.
Hey, you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm doing good.
All right. Well, let's see. Next time that we're going to be having is going to be In Your House 5. In Your House 5 Season Beatings. From, let's see where it's going to be. It's going to be from Hershey, Pennsylvania, from December 17th to 1995. So that
Ooh,
one
I
right
was just
there
a couple weeks ago.
Oh, really?
Hershey's
what brings you out
place.
That way?
No, I was there for vacation for Labor Day. So,
oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice. Well, before I let you go, hopefully that you were able to bring over a little bit of the bubbly, because it's time for the shot of the day. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the shot of the day. Shot of the day is for whatever may have happened in professional wrestling. But today, once more and once again, the shot of the day goes directly to Matt Johnson for filling in for Kyle Cruz on the BICC
hey.
Radio Network. Again, I have stated this numerous times that you have been a numerous recipient of the shot of the day. I think more so than we have ever counted.
Three or four times.
Yes. So again, I want to personally thank you for stepping up, filling in at the last minute. Hopefully, this does not become a continuing trend because I know you are a very busy individual, and I don't like keeping you away from Thursday Night Football and the rest of your podcasting content.
No, you're good, my friend. As long as it fits in my schedule, I'd be more than happy to be a part of your show. It's a fun time. It really, truly is.
Well, I thank you very much. So, like I do every week with Kyle, I'm going to sit here, and we pour this booze, and we drink this booze because we think it's yummy. So, over the tongue, in throats, to party in our tummies. Down the holas, bitcholas. Just kick back a little bit little bit of Smirnoff Canadian vodka right there, since we are from the Great White North. Just trying to keep it a little bit classy, trying to keep it on schedule here. Ooh, and it is warm going. But, Matt, thank you again for filling in. I greatly appreciate it. Hopefully we get to do it with Kyle back on the phone soon, too. And we can just have a nice wrestling discussion once more, once AEW strikes back up again.
That sounds good to me, my friend. Thank you so much.
Not a problem. For Matt Johnson, this is Justin Time, and we will see you next week.